sign up?
I don't know.
Happy to do it.
Good morning. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order. Committee, we're going to start off with opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 681.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure includes intergovernmental entities in the definition of local government for the purpose of public employee benefit plans. There are no amendments, and the Senate vote was 28-0.
Good morning, Senator. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Senator Alan Bates from District 3 in Southern Oregon. Thank you, chairs and committee members. Sorry to keep you waiting, but we're on Peter Buckley and I were on the hotline to Ashland, and that took us a little longer this morning than we expected to, so the chamber had a lot of questions. Senate Bill 681 opens up PIB to being allowed to go into, or COG is allowed to go into PIB, I should say. In 2013, we passed a bill allowing local governments to go in, but the COGs were left off. Here's a council of governments. There are a large number of these, surprisingly, in the state, and many of them would like to join PEB for savings and to allow them to have better benefits for their employees. There are currently 7 COGs in Oregon, including Metro, located throughout the state. Aside from Metro, there are 7 COGs representing 17 counties, 85 cities, 7 school districts, 3 community colleges, 1 university, 4 utilities, 3 tribes, 2 ports, 10 special districts, and a partridge in a pear tree.
It was getting to that point.
Yeah, and I really didn't realize what that meant, frankly. And our local COG has been very effective and does a great job for us. And they were not allowed to get a PEB, and they brought this to me, and I didn't see a reason we shouldn't be doing it. And after a lot of discussion and work locally, we decided to give them an option. Now, one thing we need to know about this, if they decide to go into PEB, they really can't get back out. So they have to make a very careful decision to go in and not pull out. If they do pull out, they have to go into the exchange with their individual program. So it's something that gives them an option. It doesn't mean they have to. It's something they can opt into if they want to. But they understand that if they do want to get out of it, they're going to have to go into the health exchange. So that's basically it. It's a pretty simple bill. We didn't have much trouble on the Senate side with it, and I hope you'll look at it in a positive fashion here, too.
Thank you. Questions?
Two questions. Question and comment, Mr. Chair. Thank you. One, does the bill also allow the local government entity to be a part of the Oregon Education Benefit Board, or is it just for PEB?
Mr. Chair and Representative, it is only for PEB.
Follow up. So the law that got passed, and I think it was in 2013, that allowed either, is there a reason why that was left out of this and it was just only go with PEB? And the reason I'm asking, I actually have experience with this law. I got to use it in my other job to help out a hospital get a much better benefit deal than they would have gotten as a result of this. And so I'm just asking. I actually worked on this.
I will research that. I have a hunch that maybe they can go into OEB. We only had the discussion locally about they wanted to go into PEB, and it just adds one word to the existing law. So I wouldn't be surprised, Mr. Chair and Representative, that they do have an opportunity to go into OEB, and I will research that and get back to you. I wouldn't be surprised if you're correct and I'm wrong.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I know this has no revenue impact or fiscal impact on the state of Oregon, but what does it do to the COG itself? Because the COG is supported by tax dollars from entities. Will it raise their costs substantially, or do we know?
Mr. Chair and Representative, this is going to lower their cost.
Good.
And probably the reason they've not gone to OEB, as I think about this, OEB's cost will continue to go up at 6 or 7% a year. PEBs are down 1% or flat. They've done a really good job putting wellness programs in and saving money. We've capped them, and they've done a good job of staying underneath the cap. So I think that was one of the reasons they thought they'd like to go into it right now. This will save them money.
Thank you.
Other questions? So I guess the question is also about PERS. Would this extend the definition? I know PEB is not part of, PERS is not part of PEB, but as far as a benefit plan, would the LCOG members be eligible as PERS employees as well?
This does not affect any situation they have with PERS. our particular COG has a mixture of PERS and non-PERS employees, so it's this does not affect that at all. This is strictly health insurance.
So many of them already have PERS. So
some do and some don't.
Yeah.
It depends on what government entities they're working with.
Yeah. Great. Yes. Don't see any other questions, Senator. Thank you so much for getting us started on this bill.
And I'll get that information back to you. Mr. Chair, thank you for your time. Committee, thank you for your time. I hope you'll look at this positively, and I will get that information back. I think you're probably correct, and I'm probably in error.
Well, we can certainly have our committee administrator search that out if you don't have time as well.
We'll make it happen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else?
Nobody else signed up.
No one else would wish to testify on Senate Bill 681? Or let me rephrase that. Is there anyone else? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 681. And who is
the work session?
Reflection on any of us. At least I hope not.
Committee, I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 76.
Committee members, this is a measure you heard March 22nd. It's a measure from the Secretary of State's office. It does three things. It repeals the requirement for a business to file with the Secretary of State a notice of intent of the going out of business sale. And instead, the business would self-generate a notice and post it. And the second thing, it merges the requirements dealing with registration, recording and fees for union labels and fraternal insignia with the requirements for trademarks. And third, it repeals the provisions relating to filing credentials of a member of the consular corps with the Secretary of State. Declares an emergency, no amendment, the Senate vote was 29-1, there's no revenue, and there's no fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 76 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 76 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Escobel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. My question would be, if my member serves me correct on this committee, we've been through this about these going out of business sales. We had a bill that required the businesses to post going out of business, but they couldn't do it for over 30 days or 60 days. I can't remember what it was. Will this in any way affect that, or was the reason we registered them with the state?
That's
the question I would ask.
Peter Threlkill to come up. I
remember
that, actually researched this a little bit myself as well, because I had some questions about this. But we'll let the Secretary of State's office offer their
Good morning, Peter Threlkill, Secretary of State Corporation Division. It doesn't change the 90-day requirement.
90 days, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Could you introduce yourself for the record?
Peter Threlkill, the Secretary of State's office.
Right. Is there a follow-up to that question? So it's my understanding, though, they won't be required to serve this notice at the Secretary of State, though, that they would be required to post it at the point of sale.
Chair Holby, that's correct.
And Representative Doherty.
Actually, this is just kind of a curious question, and maybe you don't know the answer, but why was this in the first place? Why did they have this kind of thing?
Chair Holby, Representative Doherty, it was a few years ago. There was some concerns from other businesses that their competitors were holding these sort of ongoing going out of business sales.
Like for 4 years?
Always, yeah. We're always going out of business. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I found it. Thank you.
And that is correct. I remember this from a different committee that there was some complaints about some businesses that were perpetually going out of business and really were not. And it was a advertising gimmick that was considered somewhat false and misleading.
But maybe it was the sale that boosted them.
Yeah, kept them alive.
it's kind of one of these.
Perhaps.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, in that regard, I remember when I was in college being amused by this place on 82nd Avenue that had that for sale. And finally, when I moved back from graduate school in 74, they still were going out of business.
Right.
And 64 was when I first saw it. So, that was an issue.
And there was some concern whether this really would impede the ability of the Department of Justice to enforce this type of law if there was no filing really to document this. But I had a conversation with the Department of Justice, and they said it wouldn't prevent them from enforcing this law. So they wouldn't bring an action based on the filing of the Secretary of State anyway. So they sort of go in and notify the business that, of the law and wait for compliance. So
thank you.
So I'm much more comfortable with the bill as it is right now. So are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you.
It was critical that you were here. So with that, we have a motion. Matthew, could we have a roll call vote?
Mr. Chair, if I may, real quick.
Oh, Representative Widener, did you have a question?
Question. I just wanted to make a brief comment. I understand the going out of business and we support that, but this is a goofy bill to me when we're dealing with trademarks as well and the consulate, and I will be a no on it because to me this should be three separate bills, not one bill with all of this combined into it, because there are three separate issues that were put into one bill. So I will be voting no on it.
I don't know if the Secretary of State wants to speak to that. I know we combine issues in bills, you know, all the time. If we were to have singular issues requirements for each bill, it would, as long as it fits in the relating to clause, and I believe the Secretary of State's theme on this is these are outdated or not very useful provisions that the Secretary of State's required to do, and so I think this is an efficiency issue for them, but I'll let them speak.
Once again, Peter Threlkill, Secretary of State's Office, Chair Holvey, Representative Widener. We typically, when we're submitting legislative concepts, we'll list them individually. It's often the preference of legislative counsel to combine them. So they'll find a number of subjects, and if it's, as the chair said, if the relating clause is similar or permissive enough, they'll just combine them into one bill. So I think it cuts down on the number of pieces of legislation, but I would tend to agree with you that individual topics ought to be addressed as bills, but that's not my call.
So, Matthew, was there any other comments, questions? Matthew, could we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Beretta?
Aye.
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Byrd?
Aye.
Representative Noakes?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
No.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Kemmerer?
Aye.
Chair Holman?
Aye. Senate Bill 76, having received required votes, is passed. Consent calendar is out of order for this, so could I?
You have a no vote.
Yeah, that's why I said it's out of order.
I'm sorry, you said it was.
So spoiled my plans, but we have a volunteer for carry this bill.
Sure. Okay.
Representative Nose. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 76 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 491A. And concurrently with Senate Bill 492.
Committee members, 491 directs DAS to establish a pay equity training program, prohibits a public contracting agency from contracting with a bidder who employs 50 or more workers on a contract that exceeds $500,000 unless that bidder possesses a certificate indicating that they've completed the pay equity training program. Prohibits a contractor from retaliating against an employee who discusses their compensation with another employee. Requires the public contract to include a provision that the contract has to comply with the prohibition against discriminatory compensation and wage payments. Comes operative January 1 of 2016. There are no amendments. And Senate Bill 492 authorizes the use of accrued sick leave or personal business leave to certain employees who are victims of domestic violence, harassment, sexual assault, or stalking. There are no amendments.
And the vote?
Senate Bill 492, which is the use of accrued leave. Senate vote was 28-0. And Senate Bill 491 on the pay equity training program, the Senate vote was 30-0.
Good morning, Senator. If you identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Montes Anderson. I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, Fairview, and a little bit of East Portland. Senate Bill 491A will help to level the playing field in the workforce between men and women. This legislation is going to eliminate the barriers for women by ensuring equal pay for equal work. Currently, women in Oregon make an average of 80 cents for every dollar that a man makes, and this is only slightly better than the national average. What Senate Bill 91A, it's essential to expanding opportunity and, I feel, growing Oregon's economy. It requires businesses, as the administrator said, with 50 or more employees seeking state contracts of over $500,000, $500,000, to certify that there are no pay gaps between men and women by job class. Senate Bill 491 requires DAS to develop an online training and certification module to allow vendors state and federal pay equity laws. I want to thank DAS for working with me on this bill to make sure that this wasn't going to cost any. They said that it was on their radar to do anyway. It requires bidding on contracts over $500,000 and who have 50 or more FTE to submit certification of having taken the training with their proposal as part of the responsible bidder requirement. And there's a difference between a responsible bidder contract. I would let someone else explain that to you, but they will only have to do it at that point in time. The bill will allow the vending community plenty of time to comply without losing any opportunities to bid on any state contracts. It only applies to state contracting agencies. Local government agencies are excluded from the bill. And certification of training, as I said, is only needed when the bid is on state contracts over $500,000. I'd also like to stress that the training program will not require a fee. Agencies will only have to show a compliance of completion once during the bidder application, which occurs before a contract is awarded. I urge you to pass this bill. I really feel that it's going to bring us one step closer to equal pay for equal work in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hi.
Good morning, Senator.
Don't we do prevailing wage on state contracts now? And wouldn't that
prevailing
be the
wage
same thing as equal pay for equal job slot?
Evidently there are, and I think that the DAS could maybe talk to this better than I, but there, we want to be make sure that even in the prevailing wage, there could be in different classes different pay to the workers. I mean, there's nothing in statute that in contract that will say they must pay someone in the same class the same pay.
And I believe this also applies to 279B, which are goods and services and not prevailing wage contracts as well.
And DAS would have to.
That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
They
have
to pay one individual more than.
Representative Widener.
Is DAS going to come up and testify on this?
I believe so, yes. Would DAS like to come up at this point? I was, you know, trying to allow the senator to testify on both bills because I know she has other things to do before I brought DAS up. But
she can do the other one. I just want to make sure.
Senator, would you like to testify on the other bill?
Please go forward. Good morning, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Madeline Zike. I'm the Chief Human Resources Officer at DAS. And please excuse my voice. I have a little bit of a cold this morning. So a little bit about like Lauren McCall, if any of you remember her. thank you for the opportunity to talk about this today. I could address some of the concerns or questions around the training. And the outline for the training is reflected in the amendment before you. We have been working on the training in outline format. And as Senator Montes Anderson mentioned, we don't feel that it's going to be a great deal of effort to
there's
move
no,
forward on that.
Just
thing.
Clarification, there's no amendment. We amended it into the A on the
All right.
side.
Thank you. Thank you for that.
The amendment's already been adopted.
Okay. So we're working on the outline for the training, and we feel that that's going to be really successful. A little bit of history about how this has been successful in other entities. At the federal level, there was an executive order that required a greater awareness for labor requirements and training for federal contractors. And they found that that's been very effective in helping close some of the wage gap. I also spoke with Boley just before I came up here, and if we need a little bit more information about prevailing wage, I do have a recruit that could help us a little bit with that from Boley. But the experience has been in states and the federal entity, when they have adopted these sorts of trainings, that it has really helped to close the wage gap between men and women.
Representative Escobar, follow up.
Maybe I missed this, but I don't think you answered the question. Is today, when we have prevailing wage, did the same people get in the same classification get the same pay?
Chair Holvey and Representative Esquivel, did I say that correctly? The real issue is the comparison within the classifications of the work that is being performed. So Boley could probably speak a little bit more to prevailing wage, but what this is really about is comparing the same type of work that is being done by the same types of people within a classification to make sure that gender equity exists within that work.
If I might, I think that the work includes contracts that don't include prevailing wage as well. So I think Representative Esquivel's point is that prevailing wage is a set payment for a classification of work. There is no discretion to pay anything else legally. Yeah. So, I might speak out of turn a little bit.
And Chair Holvey, Representative Esquivel, we could get you a little bit more information from our procurement folks and also from Boley about that concern regarding prevailing wage and how that applies.
Will Boley speak for a moment? Good morning.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, Paloma Sparks with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. This bill is going to apply more often when we're talking about state contracts that are for goods and services rather than public works where prevailing wage would apply. Because, yes, where prevailing wage applies, most of those classifications are set and the pay for each classification will be standard across the – there won't be a gender gap because of the in that industry.
So I believe what she's saying is that in prevailing wage, this shouldn't be an issue, but in other types of contracts, public contracts, it very well could be or maybe is an issue. Representative Hurd.
Actually, that clarified it for me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, my question would be, this will be bullier. Death in a prevailing wage situation, everything, can you pay more or above that prevailing wage to someone else or a different person?
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, you can. Prevailing wage is a floor, not a ceiling.
Other questions? I just have a thought. Who's going to be required to take the training? Is it one person in the company? Is it the HR person? Is it the owner of the company? Just one person from the company is going to suffice?
Chair Holvey, we're working with procurement to determine who the most appropriate person should be so that they can include that in their rules. But in our discussions, it's been whoever has the responsibility for signing the contracts or their designee. So we intend to be pretty flexible. As long as the company provides us with that authorization, they should be able to take the training. We also anticipate that it's going to be online. It shouldn't be really cumbersome for people to complete, and really the goal is to have it be valuable to the proposer moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And is there any accommodation for companies that have this sort of training internally already, or is this something that's going to be publicly required of these contracts that they go through this process before the contract's awarded?
Chair Holvey, at this point, it is that this would be mandated for them to complete the training and receive a certificate.
Okay. Other Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is in these, also in this, is there any quota requirement, like you have to have just as many females as males or anything like that? I mean, I'm looking at this thinking if, depending on the job, if a man is more physical and he can do more work than a woman and he can't get paid more, then I would think the employer then would want to hire more men than women to do that. So I'm just trying to look at this. And then also a follow-up question would be why the limiting the employers to 50? I mean, below 50 don't qualify, above 50 do, and just how that number was chosen.
Chair Holby, Representative Barreto, there are no quotas for male versus female in positions. It's really about educating companies to start thinking about the stereotypes and the biases that they might have regarding hiring males versus females for positions, and to educate them about that. It is our hope, certainly, that they hire the best qualified person for the job, and that still remains our goal, but we just wanted the opportunity to provide them some information about really looking at their workforce in a different kind of way that they may not have been provided before. And then, I'm sorry, what was your second question?
Just to 50. You limited it to 50, you know, over above 50 qualify for this, below 50 to 40.
Right. Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, there was some analysis done by our procurement staff in consultation with the bill sponsors to see where it made the most sense, you know, what sorts of companies might be appropriate for applying this rule to.
Okay. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, when I was looking at this, I was basing it on legislation that had passed in some other states, and that was actually why I chose 50, because that's what other states were doing.
And it is 50 full-time employees, or as opposed to 50 employees that are both part and full?
Chair Holby, that's correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Not seeing any. I appreciate you coming up and shedding some light on this for us.
Shall we move to the next one?
Yes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to also speak on Senate Bill 492. I call it the use of accrued sick leave or personal leave by domestic violence victims. I think you're all aware that domestic violence is really far too prevalent in our state, and it really cuts across genders and races and ethnicities, sexual orientations and socioeconomic classes, and we have actually lost far too many Oregonians to intimate partner violence. And some of the worst violence isn't even physical. It's verbal, emotional, and psychological. And often this abuse leads to missed work days and loss of pay for men, and it could be men, women, for women, but also it could be for men too, who may already be struggling financially. So Senate Bill 492 is just another step toward eliminating a barrier by women in domestic violence situations. It combats the negative economic consequences faced by victims of domestic violence, harassment, sexual assault, and stalking by allowing them to use any accrued sick leave or personal business leave, as well as the accrued vacation leave, which they can already use. They can already use vacation. It just amends our statute to include sick leave and personal leave, and I would urge an aye vote.
Thank you. Questions on this one? Representative Kinnemer.
I just want to ask, is it general gender neutral?
Gender neutral.
I mean, well, there are occasions where there are males who are
neutral.
Abused.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
See no mention of gender in the statute.
Margaret beats me.
Mm-hmm. So, any other questions? And I would assume this applies to any company or entity that has a paid sick leave policy.
That's right.
At this point.
Or personal leave.
Or personal leave. Correct. Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate you bringing these bills forward.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 491? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 491. Was there anyone else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 492? Seeing no one else, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 492. Like we have one more left. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 468A.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this measure provides the Commissioner of Boley with the authority to issue a warrant for unpaid amounts due resulting from a judgment. It allows 30 days from the date that the amount becomes due prior to issuing the warrant. And it requires the warrant to include the principal amount of the debt, accumulated interest, and costs associated with recording or serving the warrant. There's no amendment. There's no revenue, there's a minimal fiscal impact, and the Senate vote was 17 to 13.
Thank you. Could we have Paloma Sparks and Betsy Earls together?
It almost sounded like you're doing this.
Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Hulvey, members of the committee for the record. Paloma Sparks with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. We are here. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 468A. This bill would allow the Bureau to be more cost-effective and timely in protecting workers and ensuring people who have violated the law do not evade their responsibilities. This bill simply is a bill to allow us to do collections efforts when there is a final order in place and the there is no plan to appeal the final order. So where an employer is either ignoring a final order or simply not paying altogether, we think we should be able to make some collection action. When employees file a complaint saying that they are due wages, it's a pretty brave step for them to take. And then when they do take it and they go through the whole process and there's a determination that they are to be paid wages and then they don't get those wages paid, first of all, the loss of those wages can make a very significant impact in their life. Has an impact on the economy because they can't pay their bills, they can't move forward. Every month they get further and further behind. And we are not trying to we're not trying to do anything new. We are simply trying to make sure that employers who've been determined to owe wages pay those wages to workers. We're trying to be a little bit more cost effective, a little more timely, because these are not your run-of-the-mill employer. This is an employer who is simply ignoring a final order. Recent survey of our wage and hour records revealed 30 million in unsatisfied judgments. Over the past 10 years, that's been about 17 million. So it's a pretty big amount. It's mostly wages. And we think that this is a good way to resolve that problem and to make sure that the having debts go unpaid doesn't continue to hurt Oregon's economy or Oregon's workers.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries. And I'm appearing before you this morning to tell you that AOI and Boley worked successfully together on an amendment to 468 when it was on the Senate. We're happy with the way it turned out, and we feel that it provides adequate protection to the employer community while also giving Boley, you know, a little bit of extra help to go after employers that are completely ignoring final orders. But also, I wanted to point out, because I was a little unsure of this the other day, that if an employer is paying attention to the final order or realizes at the last minute there's a final order, starts to pay attention and files an appeal, that would stop Boley's process again. So we've had this reviewed by several of our employment attorneys. They're happy with the bill as it is, and so we're neutral on it. We think it has turned out to be a reasonable product.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the premise of what we're hearing, no one could really dispute that when a final judgment, it says judgment has entered, that people should pay judgments, whether it's public, private, whatever, that's the nature of it. Are you telling me that Boley does not have current statutory authority to collect on judgments entered? That seems unbelievable.
Chair Holvey, Representative Barton, we cannot issue orders of collections ourselves.
You go to a debt collector?
Yeah, we can go to a debt collector. We can sometimes attempt to ask Department of Revenue, although that is rarely successful. In 2013, we submitted about $945,000 in debts that were owed to DOR. They were able to get less than $50,000.
Follow up. So judgments don't, like a properly entered judgment, doesn't it attach to real property automatically? And thus, let's pretend Boley were to get a judgment on me. I own a home. There's an automatic lien on my home. Thus, you get repaid whenever I sold it, plus interest, statutory 9%.
Chair Holvey, Representative Barton, that would be true for court judgments.
This judgment means something else, I gather.
Yeah, so okay. For administrative orders and judgments, that is not necessarily the case.
Thank you.
So this is the final order from the administrative law side of the world as opposed to circuit court.
Chair Holvey, that's correct. I also wanted to clarify that an employer wouldn't have to file an appeal. They would have to file a notice of intent to appeal, which is slightly different. So they would just have to submit that paperwork, and then Boley would not be able to use this tool to collect.
Until that appeal was set. Satisfied. Representative Kinnemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Paloma, you said in instances where there is no plan to appeal the determination, how do you make that determination?
Chair Holvey, Vice Chair Kinnemer, where an employer, if we had a final order, you have, believe it's 10 days, not positive, to file a notice of intent to appeal.
I see.
Once an order is final, so if they filed that notice of intent to appeal, we wouldn't use this tool.
Okay. And follow up. A different question, actually. To either one of you, it was sort of interesting to me to see this lopsided vote and substantially partisan vote. And I'm just at a little bit of loss to understand it. My understanding is AOI is not in opposition, not in support either, but neutral on the bill. I just wanted to confirm that. And were there other arguments that appeared in the discussion on the floor or something? How would one explain this? And maybe I didn't have time to talk to some senators. I was interested to know why this came out this way.
Chair Holvey, Vice Chair Kinnemer, there was no discussion on the floor, so I don't have a good explanation for why the vote was lopsided. As far as I know, there were no floor letters.
No explaining the Senate.
Senate's a weird place.
I wish that I had, I could understand it, but, we really did try and work with AOI to make sure that they felt comfortable.
Other
and
questions?
I should add to that, Mr. Chair, we're...
I've wanted that one, too.
Well, go ahead, Representative Kinnemer. Take your other questions.
She was speaking.
Did you have an answer, too?
Only that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I wanted to reiterate that we appreciated Boley's flexibility on the bill, and we are comfortable with it. Again, neutral. We think it's a reasonable product.
Yep. That's as close to support as I've heard you in this committee.
I know it. I know. Yeah. It's a good day.
Mr. Chair, I guess mine was more a comment in that... it seems to me that we would want, in instances wherever possible, to see that employees are paid wages that are due. And this tends to be in a group of employers who are not among the most honorable of employers. And something to expedite it, I find important. Thank you. That's just my comment.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are the consequences, right? And following up on Representative Barton's comments, you know, what are the consequences then to an employer if he doesn't comply currently?
Kara Holvey, Representative Barreto. Currently, if they don't submit payment, we will try to collect. Department of Revenue will try to collect. We will then, if all else fails, try and get an order from the court to collect. But largely, the longer it takes, these are the kind of employers that are, they're going to be in the wind. They're gone. We're not going to be able to find them. The longer it takes, the harder it's going to be to find them. These are not your standard run-of-the-mill employers. You know, I think that most employers, if they knew about a final order from Boley, at a minimum, would say, well, you know, I'm going to appeal this.
So follow up. So thank you, Mr. Chair. These are fly-by-nighters. They're in business one day, they're out of business the next, and they start up another business a week later.
Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, that's likely.
Representative Barton.
Thank you. A follow-up on Representative Barreto's question. When you say that Boley and or Department of Revenue will try to collect, can you be a little more descriptive? What do you mean by try to collect? What do you do? I'm somewhat startled that it's so easy to evade an administrative judgment of this nature.
Chair Holvey, Vice Chair Barton, Department of Revenue will try and collect. Usually that comes from collections from if there's tax return, tax refund money that they can collect.
A lien on tax refund, basically.
Then after a few months of attempts, they will then send it back to our offices. Our staff will try and track down the individuals and see if there's anything. We will work with DOJ to see if there's a way that we can get collection. And then ultimately, DOJ will try and get something, a judgment, a lien. But it's a lengthy process.
Time-consuming.
It's very time-consuming.
Representative Hurd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Sparks, in the event that this legislation makes its way through the building, you and I talked the other day in my office about the fees and fines that are applied to these negligent employers. So as we talk about, I just want to get it on the record because I'm not totally seeing it in the bill. So if you collect $100 and there's a $10 fine put on it, but that employer only has $100 in their bank account, not $110, the employee will take number one position, not Boley, as far as getting what they're owed before Boley gets anything. Is that correct? Or this whatever fund the money will eventually go to for the fine collection?
Chair Holvey, Representative Hurd, that's correct. We always prioritize getting money back to the workers.
Thank you.
Other questions? Comments? Thank you. I appreciate that. I know I had a constituent issue that there was an issue involved with this, and it also involved contracts that somebody was doing with the public and had collected a bunch of down payments, owed a bunch of wages, and the complaints went in on this. And 6 months later, the complaints were still trying to wind themselves through, and that this particular individual left state with all the money, and there was no way to recover any of it. I appreciate you bringing this forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else that wanted to testify on Senate Bill 468A? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 468A, and we'll stand at ease for just a moment. Colt. Reconvene the House Committee on Business and Labor, and I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 492.
Chair Holvey, I move Senate Bill 492 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Barton moves Senate Bill 492 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. before we have any discussion, I'll have Jan remind the committee of what the bill is.
We will, Mr. Chair, committee members. This is the measure that allows the use of the accrued sick leave or personal business leave when the employee is taking time off for reasons related to domestic violence, harassment, sexual assault, or stalking. It applies to businesses that have six or more employees.
Thank you. Further discussion on Senate Bill 492. Not seeing any. Love this quiet committee. Matthew, can we have a vote on Senate Bill 492?
Representative
Beretta?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Duskoff?
Aye.
Representative Evans?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Yes.
Representative Byrd?
Aye.
Representative Zuss?
Aye.
Representative Wagner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Barton?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair Holbig? Aye. Senate Bill 492, we haven't received the votes, has passed. And carrier volunteer to carry Senate Bill 492. Thank you, Representative Fagan.
Happy to.
With that, I'll close work session on Senate Bill 492. And
debate.
Anything else? We committee, we will be meeting on Friday.
You were a popular chair until now.
I knew it couldn't last. You know? He's like, give you guys
what time on Friday?
Three or four. Friday's off, and this is what I get.
That's right.
Yeah, the inspiration.
8 o'clock.
Eight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry, Barton. Yes. That'd be important.
With that, I'll adjourn the House Committee on Business.
Do I have volunteers to get a dummy so we can hang it in the effigy out here for Friday?
Yeah.